Hello, friend. We are here to talk about Mr. Robot Season 3, Episode 7. Come join us.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
We are here. We are live. A couple days after Thanksgiving.
I'm so into this.
For Mr. Robot. I'm your host, Steve Kaufman. You can find me on Twitter at Steve Kaufman. That is K-A-U-F-M-A-N-N. I'm not alone. To my immediate left.
I'm just saying, Leon had it on point with this song.
He really did.
Hi, everyone. I'm Leslie. You can catch me at LeslieTheFace on Twitter and Instagram.
Yo, every time Michael spits game, I believe him. What's up, guys? It's JC. Follow me at JC Rubio TV. And what is up, chat roll? It is exploded tonight. We have literally Litman, the artist, Ace, Ryan, Black Magic. What's up? Join the chat.
Let's all the hear. Usual suspects, plus a couple other names I haven't seen.
Love it.
Yes. I love it when our chat gets hard, goes hard. Dom goes hard.
Yeah.
And Dom finally realized, I think, a term we've all been kind of seeing, that I think Dom is realizing that White Rose is going to get away with everything.
Yep, that's how it ends. That's the realization. This episode, can I just say, was like, it left me feeling dark AF. I mean, like...
Girl, I feel you. Right? I was having the worst day in my life that day, and then I'm with my girl, I'm like, so let's watch Robot. She's like, okay. I literally wanted to slip my wrist after that episode.
It's such a sad episode. Oh my gosh. And it's cynical in the way it ends, I feel like, as well, with Dom saying those things. And it's like, I feel like up until this point, I was like, you know, White Rose is such a badass, you know, in control of everything. Yeah, you know, villain. But, you know, I really hate White Rose at the end of this. I'm just like agreeing with Stupid Price. It's like, you really are like a sadistic fuck. Like, shit, you know?
That was the beauty of the episode, though. I think everyone was broken except for White Rose, even the viewer. And I think that's the beauty of it. I think even Esmail wrote that in the episodes, that we're part of this because we've been on this bandwagon for a season and a half. Time travel, all this stuff, everything. Is the time travel, is that out the window?
Right?
Was it ever in the window? Like, that was us. I don't think the show ever actually even subtly implied that there'd actually be time travel. I think at a certain point...
Are we Angela, though, at this point? Were we manipulated into just going off the rails and Sam Esmail's just laughing at us like White Rose?
Kind of. I think it makes more sense that White Rose is brainwashing people into thinking she has the ability to do time travel or multidimensional travel or bring people back and don't ask any questions, which is cultish. Like, that's really, really... Like, cult of personality, like, oh my god, this is, the darkness of this episode, I think, is finally settling in on me, where I'm like, oh my god, you're right. Like, because I would join the cult of White Rose in real life.
We did, for a year.
Like, we followed down the rabbit hole thinking, oh, we're going to have all of these fantastical, you know, I don't know, things happening, and now it's like, well, you know, maybe none of that, maybe, like... It's really just to fill her pockets.
But can we say that with 100% accuracy? Because...
No, but we can't say anything with 100% accuracy
exactly
in this show.
The show. Because there were other things. Fans brought it up to me because I've always had that theory that everything's off by one. Like, you know, you've been in season two, everything's slightly off with the dates. Well, a Redditor put this up, and a chat role asked me to talk about this. In the FBI control room this episode, if you go back to the episode, when they're cutting between Trenton and Mobley and the FBI in their control room watching them to break into the room, when they go to scene by scene, the clock doesn't move forward. It actually moves backwards, and then it picks back up again.
Wow.
I caught bits and pieces of that, too, that I think it was... And the editing of that was so... It's sad that we're at a place now where that kind of editing, you're not like, oh, they're coming through the door. This is all in real time, where it's like, nope, this is probably a day after the first thing.
No, I get that. No, but what we're saying is when they were cutting to, as they were moving forward, the agents moving into the house, and a shout out to New Mexico where they shot it, but when they were going into the house... The clock, when they would go back to the control room, it'd go 507, 508, 504, 505, 506, 507. each time they cut. And the clocks are up there on the screen. And they're lettered in red, which, as we know with Sam Esmail, everything in red means something, and it's usually something bad. And for people saying that, well, it could have just been an error in editing and there's so many things that they have to catch on. Esmail, if you guys haven't watched The Treatment with Elvis Mitchell, it's this great NPR podcast. He had Esmail on last week.
Mm-hmm.
And Esmail, he edits blinking out of the show. If you look at the characters, they don't blink. And he's done that on purpose. He's down to that detail. So wow. I'm thinking he's caught.
So to say there's a continuity error in the time, that's impossible.
Right.
That's fair.
Sorry about that. I just had to spew that out.
But then...
I mean, while we're talking about that scene, so we lost two big characters this episode. We haven't seen them in a long time.
I kind of assume we lost them, though.
No, but
I'm happy we got to see them this week.
No, but it's funny because I agree. I feel like a lot of people had written them off. And we haven't seen Trent and Mobley in a long time. And yet, that's that whole, you know... That whole scene really left me sad. I don't know. Like, I expected them to die. And as soon as it was happening, I was like, but then, I don't know, actually seeing, like, their dead bodies on the floor and then, you know, finding out how, you know, they're going to go down for being the masterminds of this huge E-Corp attack. They're putting up the Iranian flag. And, you know, earlier in the episode, we, you know, heard them talking about, like, oh, I'm going out on a date. My brother's going to be freaked out. Like, they're people. They were just, and they got caught up in it. It's just really tragic. And it's still, like, as much as we kind of saw it coming, it still affected me.
I like what you said about that. You knew it was coming, but it still hit you.
Yeah.
And I guess that's kudos to direction and how it shot. Because we've always noticed that every time, like, let's say with Terrell's wife, when she was... They've always made they've alluded to whenever a death happens, it's never this long, drawn-out thing. It's quick and fast. Mm-hmm. Just like how a death can happen. It's just like that. And then this happened with...
That's true.
With Frederick and Tanya, Mobley and Trenton, that, you know, we knew it was coming. Or did we know? Did we know it was coming? I mean...
We figured... A lot of people figured they had already died or were... I don't know. At the beginning of this episode, they're tied up with Leon. And I'm figuring that their moments are numbered.
Yeah. That's kind of what I thought at the end of the season.
Oh, when Leon showed up?
Leon showed up to just kind of take care of them.
Yeah.
I didn't realize how big a deal, like how big a pawn they were. That they're like literally the scapegoats.
Yeah.
So that we can rehab Tyrell's image.
Yeah.
We can rehab Tyrell's image as he was held captive by the Dark Army and F Society. By F Society. No one's talking about the Dark Army. That's the whole point.
Mm-hmm.
So by F Society. And now they magically, within days of Tyrell being in custody and giving this story, they catch the guys who do it. Also,
conveniently, you know, they have a brown woman in there and, you know, the pretty blonde, you know, white guy face of the company will probably get out of this.
Yeah, because you put,
you know,
and also,
looking clean.
Also, there's very much something to be said about what they're doing here that if you put Tyrell's picture on TV and say he's the guy behind the Five Dawn attack, we'd all believe it because that's what you tell us.
Mm-hmm.
But if you then tell us, actually, he was kidnapped by foreign people with ties to Iran.
Mm.
Look at this one. She wears a hijab. Like, there's something to it. So much so that I think it's intentional that the only real connection to Iran was an Iranian flag and that one of the two happens to wear a hijab.
Yeah.
Like, they didn't actually make... Like, Dark Army made a point to, like, not have to leave any more of a connection than that. Nope.
Yep.
Iranian flag.
That's enough for people to just buy it and move on.
Sprinkle some crack on them. Get out of here.
Well, remember, there's also the little throwaway lines. There was a throwaway line with Dom and Santiago, corroborating with what you just said about the fact that, remember the guy they caught a few weeks ago who had made that F Society video?
Mm-hmm.
He also said that it was Trenton Mobley.
Yeah.
A little line they got there.
So, we are realizing, because I was one of the people who was wondering, like, why this guy, like... He was specifically there in order to... Now they have two witnesses to point at these people. So that was his purpose. And we saw that explanation this episode.
I hate to say this, but how beautiful... I hate to... Because it makes no sense. And as much as I hated this episode, because I was supposed to hate it, but just how the Dark Army thought of everything. I'm to the point where I'm questioning Krista's counsel.
Yes! Oh my gosh. I said, I made the exact same note after rewatching it. I was like, you know what? White Rose is so meticulous and careful that I feel like there's no way he doesn't know who Elliot's therapist yeah. is. And so, yeah, the whole time the lawyer's like, oh, no, don't say anything. Don't. I'm like, you know what? You're pushing for that a little too hard. I totally would believe that.
What's the chat roll thing?
Do you think, payroll.
Yeah, let us know, chat roll, if you think White Rose has a hand in this or at least understands the pieces and knows how they'll fall. I think it's something like that.
Yeah.
I think White Rose knows what Elliot would or wouldn't say at a therapist's office and what his therapist would or wouldn't do.
Yeah.
Look, here's the thing. You know, I know we're jumping everywhere. I know the inmates are running it tonight.
Yeah.
No, I always question Krista. Why is she still with Elliot after everything he's done to her?
Mm-hmm.
Because he hacked her. You know, he was in her life and she still takes him on. Why?
The more we think about it, the more I think there might be a Dursley situation. For those who don't know, in Harry Potter, he has to stay with his relatives named the Dursleys, who treat him terrible. They literally put him in a cupboard under the stairs. And we don't find out till later that there was a larger plot arc to the fact that the Dursleys had to keep him.
Hmm.
And there's also a further plot arc that the villain broke his soul into seven pieces, one of the pieces literally being Harry. And that the Dursleys may not have actually been terrible people. And it was Harry that was making them terrible. But anyway, I think there could be a Dursley turn.
Okay.
With Krista, the egg, White Rose, or someone, or the Dark Army, somehow influenced her to continue to see him.
That's certainly a possibility. I really do think, though, I don't think she's connected to Dark Army. Mm-hmm. I feel like she genuinely has an interest in him. I feel like she's oddly fascinated by him.
Yeah.
And that's why she continues to treat him. And it also kind of reminds me of, like, on The Sopranos, you know, Tony sees his therapist the whole run of the series. And at some point, he threatens her, and he creates creative complicated situations for her in her personal life, and she still sees him, and he's a mob boss. So I feel like I just buy the fact that maybe someone, a therapist, can at some point get attached to her client
mm-hmm.
that she wants to see it through at some point and figure out what's at the bottom of it.
And she has a propensity of being drawn to damaged men since season one.
There you go. And now that Mr. Robot has started to reveal himself, I think now she's just even more curious to, like... what's going on with this person? I want to keep, you know, seeing them.
With that, he revealed this. This is the second time he's revealed himself to Krista, and each time it's been behind the red books.
Yeah,
obviously,
but it's just a wall of red. And you know, we say the red; it means something. Mm-hmm. And I always, you know, a little side note, of course, a little nod to the Matrix in that scene
mm-hmm.
where you're hearing, you know, his voice getting distorted.
Oh my gosh, that was good. Again, I feel like they're so good at making me kind of try to feel like what Elliot is feeling at that moment, like just this distortion in his head, like fighting voices.
And very light,
yeah.
Elliot episode this week.
Yeah,
yeah. He really wasn't.
He was at the beginning, and then.
He was at the beginning, and then he had this, and then.
And then Mr. Robot kind of takes over for the rest of the episode. I wanted to know, in that scene with Mr. Robot and Krista, he kind of encapsulates this whole episode as far as he's saying, he goes on a rant, like saying, you know, I was behind the whole five nine attack, and I'm the architect, and, you know, the conspiracy. And mm-hmm. he sounds like, again, if you haven't followed him, he really just sounds like a crazy person going on a rant.
Yep,
right.
But then, you know, he starts saying the real puppet masters are behind this, and that's like the theme of this episode, because we thought that Price was a puppet master, right? Until his interaction at the end of this episode with White Rose, and we found out he was put there. And White Rose is the actual puppet master, and even someone like Price is still, you know, doing someone else's bidding, being controlled, you know, being hit on the wrist for having to do something asked twice. Like, you know, and all of these people who think they're in control or are perceived to be in control are really just at, like, the whim of someone else.
I buy that. Also, it was Ace Sky Knight in the chat who says it might be an episode 7 thing. Elliot is never in episode 7. I will check your work later.
Nice.
We will grade your paper. We will.
Wow, that was part of SML's plan, because I think it was season 1 or 2. He films them back. And like episode 8 is supposed to be 7, and 7 is supposed to be 8.
Yeah.
I think he did that in either season 1 or 2. I think it was one of the seasons. He flips them. So you're right. Yeah. So then, wow, that's no coincidence.
Yep. I'll definitely check your work on that. where do we want to go from here? I think this is kind of a choose your own adventure, this episode.
Ooh.
Well, I'd like to dive into the White Rose Price conversation, because that one was heavy, and it was we learned a lot. I mean, I feel like we've sort of slowly this season start to see that White Rose is the one really in control. But, like, he Price is just as confused as all of us. Like, why did you have to do this? And his answer was as simple as, I had to ask you twice. Mm-hmm. Like, it's so petty.
But, like, White Rose has that much control that it's the idea of if you say...
Supremely egotistical.
Like, if you say, come here to a dog, and the dog doesn't come here, you have to ask the dog twice. When the dog does come here, it's the equivalent to smacking that dog.
No, well, I mean, not smacking. It'd be like murdering all of these puppies around the dog and seeing, like, see?
Come here when I say once. Although, let's be fair, I don't know if a dog would totally get that. Dogs live second. Dogs.
This was your analogy.
I know. I take it back immediately, but dogs live like every 5 seconds to every 5 seconds, so I'm not actually sure if that analogy works.
We'll let it slide. Okay, but going with that scene, who thought, because they went through the flashback of season one, the last episode, this whole time I always thought it was Elliot that he was talking about, it, but it wasn't.
Yeah.
It was Angela. That's, you know, his discussion with Price and White Rose, you have it under control. I don't remember the exact dialogue.
Yeah.
But this whole time, who thought it was Elliot? I thought it was Elliot the whole time.
Yeah, I thought it was Elliot too, that for whatever reason, Angela is this asset.
That whole sequence, I was surprised because... Mr. Robot isn't the type of show that usually does the flashbacks to kind of, like, hold your hand a little further. But they did, and I felt like maybe in this scene it was necessary, because you're right. I maybe not would have remembered, pinpointed those exact interactions with them.
Well, it gave it depth. It gave it incredible depth, because no one would have thought that it was Angela. That's the beauty. That's, oh my gosh.
Because Angela's situation seems so minute.
Did you guys notice that in that particular scene, the way that he, there was a shot of a woman playing a harp in the back scene, but he didn't call it a harp. He called it a lyre.
Correct.
Mm.
And the way that kind of intersects with, because I'm looking back at another scene with the harp and the violin, with the there's a lot of Greek characteristics in this episode, and I just thought it was fantastic the way that they portrayed that. You know,
also that poster behind Price's desk in season two as well that I've is in the. Like, the depth of my Twitter photos. I tweeted a picture of this photo that it was very much... I think it was Europe before World War One, and it was, like, four different things, including the Ottoman Empire, which would have kind of been a precursor to Greek, or, like, had Greece in it. I'm off task.
Well, there was a Roman emperor by the name of Nero.
Correct.
He had a... what was the quote? He fiddles with the violin as the city of Rome burns.
Mm.
So it's a huge. It's there's this large parallel between that and what happened at Ecor with the 71 buildings that burned down.
And then it was repeated again with Irving and Mr. Robot when they were looking up top of the building, and there was the party up top.
Yeah.
Mm.
Once again, they were the string pullers, and they were celebrating after thousands had died.
You can't change that. And that was another thing that made this episode kind of sad, because, you know, in the beginning of the series, we're thinking, you know, they're going to do this great revolution. They're going to try to, you know, and at some point we lost, you know, the point or the idea that that could actually work. But now it's like, well, now nothing's going to work. Like, you literally can't stop these parties. You can't stop the rich from... being richer. You're literally only going to screw the people whose lives are being disposed of.
The best you can do is kill everyone in that party and then get arrested forever. Yeah. Like, that's... If you truly, genuinely felt that the people in that... the people on that rooftop are the enemy, that's the best you can do.
Yeah.
And then, like, hope you do it in a way where everyone else does it. But then it's anarchy. And even then, those people will still find a way to take control again.
Yeah. People.
Like, I love how on so many levels this show parallels Fight Club, including the fact that we all see Fight Club as this super anti-corporation movie that gets played all the time and has high DVD sales and had a PS2 game.
In itself, it was
like itself
a mockery.
Was like in itself was a parody of itself.
Yeah,
kind of that. Like, this show likes to play on that too. That it's like, oh, you thought there was a revolution?
No. You thought that was the right line of thinking?
No, like, you'll get the choices. You'll get the choices those people allow you to get.
Yeah. And going back to the Angela thing, the pet project, I feel like I always saw her, you know, potential lawsuit as not really like a main thing. It was almost like a minor thing, and maybe Price saw it that way. But I think it goes back to White Rose being so careful and meticulous that I never know whether to say he or she, doesn't want any detail out of line. So even as something as small as Angela, like, potential lawsuit, he took a vested interest in it, and he's mad at Price for not taking care of it. And then that's when he reveals that he had to manipulate Angela, which I wanted to talk about the little girl, you know, that we saw when Angela was talking to White Rose. Now I'm just starting to think that, like, you know, maybe the time travel, different dimensions, different lines of universes isn't real, and this was all just, you know, a game to manipulate her, maybe the audience. But now I'm like, maybe the little girl, that wasn't even really... Maybe White Rose somehow manipulated Angela into seeing someone who looked like her as a child.
Do you want to get in this info? Do you want? Don't me to put on? I'll put on half a tinfoil hat because we're not the predictions yet.
Because that's like still an issue that I know some people pointed out is like that was one of the reasons we thought time travel or something along that line could be possible because of that little girl.
That's the subterfuge. White Rose. Oh, let's meditate on the fact that maybe White Rose does not control the universe. White Rose does not control time or space. White Rose only controls the ability to run a simulation that is so real that will make people think whatever White Rose wants them to think. And in that world, White Rose is the controller of the universe, time, space, and everything, because White Rose created everything from poof. In order to do that, you need a Hadron Collider to do supercomputing. You need all the minerals in the Congo to make even more computers. Allow me, if you will, maybe when Angela met White Rose, she was merely put through that simulation. And then White Rose was literally able to show her whatever White Rose needed to show her.
So you're saying the portal to it is a Commodore 64's?
Yes.
Okay.
The portal to it is a Dark Army agent at a Commodore 64 asking you a bunch of weird questions.
Okay.
And then you see yourself when you're 8 and you know, or 11, don't quote me on the age, and you know it's you, but then you don't tell anybody. Because, you know, reasons. Do we think, my bigger question is, do we think Angela is an asset because of that lawsuit? Or do we think Angela is an asset because she could control Mr. Robot and Elliot? Because I still think Elliot's the asset, but But I think it's a tandem thing. As an asset, Elliot needs a handler. And I think we've proven that Angela is able to handle him similar to how Darlene can, but Darlene isn't on Team Ecoin, Team E-Corp, Team Dark Army.
Maybe the fantastical idea of even simulations none of that is even remotely possible. And White Rose is just a very powerful, rich person who's able to manipulate people. And that's about it. And in order to, like, you know, make more money, make profits, gain power, whatnot. And I feel like maybe Angela wouldn't have even been a part of this if she hadn't, you know, started her lawsuit. Maybe White Rose would have just ignored her. And then after she meets her and then realizes, oh, she can handle Elliot, she has a close relationship, then she's like, okay, maybe I can use her. But maybe she wasn't even initially part of a plan at all. Maybe none of this is so special and meant to be. It's just, like, very practical. It just happened. I don't know. I'm just starting to take a step back from, like, all of the wild ideas because it could be as something as simple as just, like, oh,
wait, take a step back from the wild ideas? I don't know how to do that.
No, but that's the beauty because this show has been grounded in reality for the most part throughout all three seasons. Has it given us any concrete evidence of time travel?
Yeah.
No. Other than, well, we saw a little girl who we, as the audience, are led to believe was Angela at a younger age.
What if Angela just imagined that? I mean, Elliot imagines things all the time.
I'm saying, like, that's the shred of proof we possibly have for time travel in this show as of this moment.
So where do we go with three episodes left? Because it felt like, once again, another finale. It felt like another finale for the last 3 weeks. It feels like we've been through another finale. So where do we go from here? We feel like we're at ground zero. All the characters are at a loss except for White Rose.
Yeah.
Where do we go? We still have three episodes. But I did read that the finale this season is going to blow you away. It's just going to leave you with your jaws
on
the floor.
Can't handle it.
So I don't know what the turn is, but if it's bigger than what we've witnessed thus far, anything's on the board.
Well, yeah, like a simulation.
Okay.
Or something, or White Rose's magic. Like, let's be very honest. Like,
I don't think so anymore.
Or let's be very honest. The way this show tends to work. And we're bordering on predictions, but we're not there yet.
It's a prediction episode.
It's the episode that leads you to it. The way this show tends to work, I wouldn't be shocked if episode 10 ends with White Rose literally lifting a car with her mind. And then us
figuring... I wouldn't believe it anymore. It's her tricking us into thinking she's lifting a car with her
but
mind.
But, like, new technology at its time is usually considered magic. Like, but, like, magicians... A lot of magicians before film were magicians, and then after film became filmmakers because it was easier to do the trick. And then a lot of technology was raised from film by magicians. That there's a huge level of technology, like brand new innovative technology, is usually perceived as magic at its first step. And yeah. I wouldn't be shocked if White Rose was able to do something with science very grounded, as you would expect from this show, but is presented to us in a way where it's like, yo, that's magic, though. Yo, she just lifted a car with her eyes.
Yo, that's dope.
The fact
Frasier.
We're talking magic. So much about this. This tells you, BD Wong, Emmy, yes, yeah, please?
Always.
Yeah. I mean, come on.
Yeah, I agree completely. This episode, Angela, like, she's a basket case. And I wanted to know because I think in the description it said Angela hits the rewind button, and it was literally the case in this episode as she's like that scene, she's rewinding the building collapsing, and Darlene's just looking at her like, oh my God, you've lost it. And now I just feel like she's this little person who's like can't handle what she was a part of and all of the deaths and misery she's been a part of causing, and now she's just like trying to compute or reconcile this any way she can in her brain, like, oh look, I hit rewind, it's they're all better. It was so sad.
But I think that scene also plays with the fact that she's having trouble understanding perception. She's having trouble understanding, perceiving what she sees and comprehending it as what's real, what isn't real. Like, she's literally it. Like, but that's what happens when you see an 11-year-old you and do a bunch of bad stuff.
And White Rose is her savior.
That, like, she's genuinely, like...
She's a zealot. She's a religious... She's a fanatic. That's what she... people are coming back because I was told so.
And...
That goes along with Elliot's speech about religion in season 2. It's all connected. All of this. You know, and... Oh, gosh. What was I going to... I was going to say... Oh... You know, I got DMs about that, about Angela hits rewind, and Ryan, I'm talking to you, buddy, and we're like, yeah, so what's going to happen is this episode's going to be a flashback, and we're going to find out Angela's mom and Price, how they conceived Angela. Send your hate mail to JCRubioTV.
Well,
so it was funny.
So your DMs are clearly open.
They like to play
with us.
They like to play. That's why I feel like fantastical ideas... I'm just a cynical person now. I'm like, nope.
All right, two interesting things came up in the chat right now I will bring up. Moti, is White Rose the Mr. Robot for Angela? I don't...
No.
I feel like White Rose is...
Not quite the same.
I feel like White Rose is the Mr. Robot for Minister Zhang, but like an actual manufactured and controlled one. So it's full-fledged Hulkin Banner. Also, there was another question. Where are we on the Price is Angela's father business? Without time travel, without rewinds, without upside downs. Just that he...
I don't subscribe to that idea.
Rewatch the show with that in your mind and see how what you think about it. That's what I always have to
say. There was always a creepy dad vibe.
I kind of always thought he was hitting on her a little bit.
But if you see it with that, because that was the obvious, you know, pretty young blonde and whatnot. But then now see it with those eyes, because you do a flashback and I think he like pushes her hair back and he's kind of like... You show there's a line in season 2 where he says it's something like to the effect you show chutzpah or something, you know, like he was almost like a proud like chip off the old block, you know. But we didn't see it that way because we thought Angela was she was into older dudes and this kind of stuff. So it was kind of put in. Esma put it in there for a reason. But if it ends up being Price being the father, it's all the misdirects and whatnot.
Our chat is staunchly against that sentiment. It's like no. Nah, he's a creepy old man. He wants to bang the hot blonde. No.
I mean...
There's nothing more to it.
Nice. I wanted to kind of mention also the very first scene of this episode with Leon, Mobley, and Trenton on the couch. And there's a dead guy on the floor. We found out it was roommate. And then they have this discussion about Frasier and Knight Rider, which was hilarious. I feel like he's talking about how Frasier got so many Emmys and all these awards and how there's no way he could have pulled as much action. I didn't watch Frasier, but a few episodes, so I don't remember that part.
There was a known trope of television sitcoms of that time where if you shoot in L.A. and you cast women in L.A., you're going to cast the most attractive women that come into the room, which are all the women. So when you have a lead who happens to be Frasier, and then you shoot a show in L.A., you tend to cast a bunch of beautiful women, and it becomes an uncanny valley. Almost, where it's like, that doesn't make any sense. The Drew Carey Show is also notorious for this, too, where you're like, Drew, Ed is friends.
I watched Cheers, and Frasier on Cheers didn't have that many women. He dated Diane, and then he married, and that was it.
He was married for a long portion of Cheers. And yeah.
We're
not going to nitpick too much. We're not going to go too hard into the Frasier verse.
But that whole exchange was funny. I just felt like it was a cool little tone they added. And then I wanted to point out that the keys he grabs before he takes them on to the ride into the desert, it said World's Sexiest Grandma, which I thought was funny. It was quick shot, but like, we've kind of touched upon this earlier episodes. We'll have a mug that says, like, World's Greatest Dad, or, like, all of these, like, little specific detailed annals. I feel like that's a little... I don't know if it means anything, but it's just things that have been popping up.
I think it's his grandma's Cadillac. I think it's just so much more lateral.
No, but yeah, but there has been, like, instances of that stuff sprinkled throughout the season, specifically, like, you know...
Someone brought up the fact that
my son's the coolest.
Kinetic Static, talking about the opening scene, that it was very Tarantino-esque.
Mm. Yeah.
I thought it got a little cutesy in that, but there was other scenes like that. We've been talking about this the last few weeks of it in dialogue being kind of Tarantino-esque. But I had a little trouble when they were in the Cadillac fighting for their lives.
Yeah, I agree.
Mobley told her to floor it. She's never driven a car, dude. I mean,
I was so mad at him for that. I was like, are you serious? You're gonna put your life in the hands of someone who just let her untie you and get in the front. It takes 3 extra seconds, and then of course she crashed. I was so mad at him. I was like, seriously, dude, that's why you're dumb.
That's why you're dead. That's why you're dead. We're still sad about it. But, like
you're
come
gonna make
on,
her
bro.
Drive. She doesn't know how to drive. Can you just let her? That's what she was doing. And he literally stops her and makes her go in front. I completely agree.
You know how everything's covered on the show? We should go on J-Date and look for Juanita and see if she's got a profile.
Oh my gosh, you're right.
You know she does. You probably have to go to New Mexico on J-Date. But you'll probably find Juanita. Reddit, we believe in you.
Yes.
Internet, your time is now. Find Juanita. Also, what time is now? Is history's critically acclaimed series Vikings will premiere with a 2-hour season premiere airing Wednesday, November 29th. That's tomorrow, 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific, because they're cable. They can do that. Like White Rose, they can just control time. Wow. Season 5 begins with Ivar the Boneless asserting his leadership over the great heathen army while Lagertha reigns queen of Kedah. We'll go with Kedah. Ivar's murder of his brother Sigurd sets the stage for a vicious battle to come as Ragnar's sons plot their next move after avenging their father's death. Bjorn follows his destiny to the Mediterranean Sea, and Floki, who is suffering from the loss of his wife, Helga, takes to the seas, submitting himself to the will of the gods. This season is full of starting alliances and unbelievable betrayals as the Vikings fight to rule the world. Season 5 is 10 episodes. Who will rise this show?
Vikings history.
It's on history tomorrow night. I'm excited.
Vikings.
Tune in.
You know one thing we have not talked about yet? Because I know we've only got a few minutes.
Yes.
Tyrell and Santiago.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. I hate
Santiago so much. Oh my gosh, he's the worst. When he was on his phone and he was telling his mom or whatever, I was like, I don't care about whoever you have in treatment. I don't know if they're doing it to make us feel like, oh, you know, poor. No, I don't care.
We have to think they're...
Is it far-fetched to think that that he's not actually talking to his mother on the phone, that it's some code for... I feel like there's some coded language.
I like that idea.
I like that.
I like that idea a lot. But he seems sad or sympathetic or like.
Also, this seems to be how E-Corp and Dark Army, in conjunction with each other, compromised people.
Yeah.
That they find a family member who's really, really sick and then find a way to help them.
But then,
so it could be coded language. That would be really fun. But I wouldn't be shocked if it's just that's how you flip a really good cop.
It's like
cop.
A leader in the FBI. I don't get it. Like
that's how you flip a really good cop is we're going to help your we're going to help
but
your mother.
But couldn't he help her on his own? I don't know. I just that just seems he weak and
have,
I don't care.
He must have been in a place where he feels helpless.
There are a lot of loose ends there, though.
The way
we just need a little bit more information about the mother before.
But the thing is, I don't even care about them. Like, I don't care to even know anything about him. Like, the way he told Tyrell, oh my gosh, just like what a douchebag about his wife and son. I was just like, you
a
can
lover's
die.
Right.
You can just go get shot right now.
Well,
sir.
Remember, the mom told someone. You see that in the he tells the mom told someone about what was going on. Not to what effect. And remember, Dom is on to him.
Yeah.
Dom is on to something. And it's she's getting closer.
He got in her face this episode. Like, remember his boss.
He pulled in the power. So where does he go? Where does Tyrell go from here? That's what I want to know. After all this fallout, does he... He's got his son. So, you know, Santiago has his son. So where do we go? I mean, so it's just... I want to go to predictions because there's so much I want to predict.
Let's do it.
Okay. Well, I was just going to say about this episode, just like Tyrell and Elliot both like had moments where they're crying and it just broke my heart. And I just want to say they both did such a fantastic job because I was like, Tyrell didn't want to believe the news at first. And I was right there with him. And I was like, I know, baby, pobrecito. That means, you know, poor little thing. But they just both gave great performances. And then I love the shot where, like, he's literally screaming and crying, but the door's closed so you don't hear what's happening. I thought it was really good. And I was just so sad for him. And
how do we feel sympathy? We feel sympathy for him. And remember, this is the man who murdered Sharon Knowles with his bare hands.
I know, right?
See, that's the funny twist of it. When Esmo says, pretty much everyone has blood. They all have blood.
Yeah.
Everyone has blood on their hands.
Santiago's like, oh, you know, he's at a foster facility with 1 in 5 chance of, like, you know, getting abused. Oh, it's just... You can't help but feel really bad and just forget all the bad stuff he's done.
Well, on that note, let's go to predictions.
Music!
Now, your AfterBuzz TV predictions.
Santiago, dead the next 3 weeks, yes or no?
I hope so, yeah.
I think yes.
And I want to see it.
White Rose, whatever magic she has, is it revealed to us in the next 3 weeks, yes or no?
Yes, because there's something big happening in episode 10, and dare I say, I'm basing this on nothing. It's like I'm shooting in the dark, and that drives me crazy, because what are you backing it up with? Could this be because every season, in season 2, we said Price was, he had no vulnerabilities, he was like almost this mustache-twirling villain, he had no vulnerabilities. Now we're saying it about White Rose. You notice that? Last season it was Price. This season's White Rose is the omnipotent. He's the all-powerful Oz. I say somehow he goes down because it opens the door for Tyrell being the next bad guy. I hate to say bad guy. That's so much deeper than that.
Mm-hmm.
Where Tyrell's going to be moved into a position at the head of E-Corp. Where Price is going to be gone. White Rose.
Oh.
Yes, and White Rose... Somehow Tyrell becomes the big baddie for season 4 and 5. It becomes the
So you're saying because he told Price you have to find your replacement, and Price didn't seem happy about that. So you think they're going to put Tyrell in there?
It seems possible because remember they've been wanting to rehabilitate his image. How does that? I don't know how we get there, but it just makes sense because I'm thinking of last season.
Yeah.
No one worse as a villain than Price. This
Price
season,
alive Rose. Or dead. At the end of this season, alive or dead.
I think he'll be alive, but I think he's going to be powerless and, you know...
Fades away?
And
fades away into into the simulation?
I think for him, that's worse, like, fading away and being forgotten than dying, like, a kind of a badass death. You know, him becoming nothing is probably worse fate
But
for
what
him.
If White Rose can put him in the simulation with the blue pill where he's everything he wanted to be?
So you were saying about magic. I think it's going to be revealed that there's no magic with White Rose. There's no simulations. It's just straightforward. He's very good at manipulating people and getting control over people, and I think that's the extent of it.
So it's like Jesus magic. It's just convincing large portions of people to follow you.
Yeah.
Not touching that one. Santa Claus. No. What I was going to say.
Nobody follows Santa Claus.
Here's one thing. As my name tag falls down. The email from Trenton. Who's it going to?
Yes. Darlene.
Well, Darlene.
Someone we don't know.
Either someone we don't know, or Darlene, or someone we don't know who will alert Darlene.
Yeah, I thought either Darlene or Elliot, because Elliot was the head, head of F Society. And in season one, though, to back up Darlene, mm-hmm. they had that heart to heart talk. Trent and Darlene did mm-hmm. towards the end of the season. So there's, if anyone she's closest to, seems like it's Darlene.
So that makes sense.
Or potentially her brother, because they made a note. I mean, she right. specifically said, "My brother must be freaking out." So I mean, unless that was just a throwaway line.
Mm.
Chatroll thinks it's Dom.
Ooh.
Okay.
But how does it get to Dom? And here's the thing. Did you guys know that Trenton's was only 16?
Wait, the actress or the character?
No, the character.
The character was only 16?
How do we know this?
On the FBI board. Really? She was born November really? Something, 1988.
That actually makes a lot more sense than why she couldn't drive.
She went to Harvard. They said that.
But she was a wunderkind. She was super smart, though. Yeah. That's not
that's
a...
really... You, that means she was there at, like, 12 or...
Yeah,
it takes place really in 2015, smart. In 98, so she was 17... Oh, no, she was...
That just
hadn't turned
so
17
much
yet.
Sadder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the depth. That's what he wants... That's what Esme wants us to feel.
To be so smart to get involved in the revolution at 17? Oh, man. There are pitfalls to being smart, guys.
Shit.
Good thing I don't have to worry about that.
Some of us don't know the machine exists to rage against it till we're, like, 28... I thought that would go over a little better than
I got it.
I mean, I know.
Do we have any predictions at large before we head on out of here?
Okay, so we'll see if we hear anything more about Krista's council. Irving, what do we think about him? Like this,
I think we know his entire. Like, I think everyone's gonna like try to keep digging into Irving because of who plays him, because of how like good a character he is. I think we know everything about Irving.
Well, that's what I was saying. I feel like
there's
that's
zero
just
secrets to Irving.
Guy. And then Leon is the same. Like, they're just, I guess, high people in the army, but they're still just
they're soldiers.
Serving the machine. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
they're perfect soldiers. They're happy soldiers. Any other predictions at large, Daisy, before we head on out of here?
I just predict that the chat roll and our comments on YouTube are going to have the best predictions of all.
Yes,
I agree.
Tell us your predictions.
I will upvote all the good ones.
And I really do hope we see Elliot next episode, but we'll see if that's true about him not
Let's hope
up.
We see Elliot next episode. In the meantime, JC, where can the people find you?
You can find me at JC Rubio TV, and if you're in LA for the next 2 weeks, I'll be at the LA Auto Show and seeing it for Kia. So
Ooh.
Come by and we'll talk Mr. Robot.
And
Love
Leslie.
It. Hi, you guys can catch me at LeslieTaFace on Twitter and Instagram.
And I'm Steve Kaufman. You can find me as always on Twitter at Steve Kaufman. That is KaufMann. You can also go to thesoberyear.com. That's a vlog I'm doing. Thank you, folks, and good night, friend.
Thank you.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later!
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.